to conducting the Study in Comparative Finance meeting, dealing also with legislation. And Honorable Karim will join us 1 o'clock. I was told by the secretariat that we will have to shift from here to another venue for the last part. To V226 is on the second floor, up with the lift, just next door to us, V226, and that's where we will be conducting the second part of the meeting, getting the briefing on the PIC bill, the committee bill, by the Honorable Yunus Karim. So welcome to everyone here present, also to our team from Treasury. Mr. Rentu, apologies. You deal with apologies.
It's Ms. Mutara and Mr. Gaylor.
Honorable Mutara and Honorable Gaylor, and thank you for Honorable Chief Whip Moai that's currently present here for the Free State, and Honorable Neta from the Eastern Cape. Honorable Isaac, you wanted to, I note you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Dion George will be joining us a little late. He's just had up in another meeting, but he will be joining us.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of meetings currently running. Mm-hmm. Honorable members, we received documentation, and thank you for Dr. Makalima. Where is she? Well, there she is. For a paper on the bills that we will be dealing with today. And we received also the presentation from Treasury. I received it 9:31 after I left previous meeting, so it's still fresh on my desk, and without much to do, we will go to the presentation. While he's preparing, please read the Select Committee for Finance program. Jolani mailed it, I think, twice to honorable members. Carry that in your bag every day, because we meet at least two or three times a week. Also, the Appropriations Committee. And by our attendance, honorable members, is crucial. You have also now received some homework. Here it is, Reserve Bank Quarterly Report. This is your homework that you can go and do. Yes, I think that's all the announcements I had to make. Momo, welcome.
Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Mamoniet. Roy, the rest of the team, a strong team, over to you.
Yeah, no, thank you, Chair, and thank you for asking us to present today on probably an issue that's the biggest issue facing humankind, which is greenhouse gas emissions, and we are going to talk of the carbon tax bill and the customs.
Sorry for interrupting. All the members, we also invited the Select Committee dealing with environmental affairs, chaired by Honorable Safaku, but they've got a meeting running jointly also now with us, separately with us. So, but they were invited, and they know about this meeting. Thank you.
No, thank you, Chair, and that's why I think when this bill went through the Standing Committee of Finance, they too invited the Committee on Environment Affairs, because this tax is linked to policy that's been shaped by or initiated by the Department of Environmental Affairs. Just with me, I've got Charlene. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Charlene Hemraj from the Treasury.
Yanga Mputa, Treasury.
Chongi Kayawiti, you can call me Chongi from Environmental Affairs, thanks.
But you're not from the Treasury, right? You're from Environmental Affairs.
Yes, I just said that. No, thank you.
I wanted people to hear clearly working together.
Indeed.
Memory matching has been National Treasury. National Treasury.
Treasury. So, Chair, yeah, and we've put the names down. We don't have John Lee's name because he is from Environmental Affairs. So, Chair, just by way of background, so the whole issue of greenhouse emissions, which is mainly carbon emissions, methane, etc., as we know, is leading to global warming. And the world is racing against the clock, and there's a whole lot of processes which we've come to that South Africa is obviously committed itself to limiting its emissions, and I'll get Charlene to explain that in a moment. Yeah, with the Paris Agreement. Maybe, why don't we just go to that slide? I think we should just start there. So I want to emphasize, Chair, this is our own commitment. In COP15 in 2009, to curb greenhouse gas emissions by 34% by 2020 and by 42% by 2025. Below the, what's the BAU again? Just go through the slide, Sean.
Thanks, Momo. So this is the context within which the carbon tax has been developed. So South Africa voluntarily put forward proposals for us to reduce our emissions at COP15 in 2009, which was in Denmark. We then subsequently ratified the Paris Agreement in November 2016, and in terms of the Paris Agreement, we put forward our NDC, which is our nationally determined contributions, basically our commitments to reduce emissions, which requires that our emissions peak in 2020 to 2025, plateau for a 10-year period, and decline from then onwards. So in terms of absolute emission reductions, it means that our emissions should be in the range of around 398 to around 600 million tons CO2 equivalent. And in terms of the Paris Agreement in particular, it specifically focuses on larger emerging economies, including South Africa, and it acknowledges that in reducing those emissions, we need to specifically focus on energy-related emissions and the role for renewables.
To emphasize, it's our own commitments. It's not because anybody's imposed it on us. It's South Africa saying, this is what's needed in the world, this is our contribution. And I think we should just note that even this may not be enough. This was planned for a 2-degree change in the year 2015, right, okay. But really, I think already we're talking about the need to try and do more and look at 1.5 degrees Celsius, and even that may not be enough. But Chair, that we need to have started long ago, there's no doubt, and it doesn't mean that just because we didn't start long ago, we shouldn't start immediately. And a carbon tax is just one attempt to put a price on carbon emissions. It's in line with the polluter pay principle. That's the approach that we've taken. So if you look at then what South Africa did under the guidance from the Department of Environmental Affairs, there was the Paris Agreement. Do you want to just go through the rest of the slide, Sean, since you're the expert UN memory?
Yeah, we have Jongi here. The Department of Environmental Affairs has basically put forward the National Climate Change Response Policy. Within the Climate Change Response Policy, it outlines our policy approach in terms of reducing emissions, mitigation of emissions, how do we adapt to the impacts of climate change, and it's looking at various an adaptation strategy, and that together makes up our broader response. As part of that, it's also developing a system to enable us to measure, report, and verify our emissions, so that would help us in enforcing the various policy measures that we implement. On the mitigation side, it undertook two key pieces of work in terms of looking at ways to reduce emissions, and this was in terms of the 2008 long-term mitigation scenarios, which looked at various opportunities for us to reduce emissions, including the potential for energy efficiency measures, renewable energy, and then in 2014, it updated that piece of work through the mitigation potential analysis. That's the broader technical work that has helped inform the development of what the department is calling the National Mitigation System, which is the suite of mitigation policies, and a part of that, the carbon tax is put forward as one of the instruments together with the carbon budgeting system of the Department of Environmental Affairs. So the carbon tax is located within our national climate change policy response, as well as it's recognized in the National Development Plan as a policy measure that should have been introduced by 2015 already.
So, Chair, the carbon tax has been on the agenda for many years now, and if anything, we can be criticized for taking too long to pass it, but we started certainly as a Treasury. We've been working with GR very closely from 2006-2007 when we presented our paper on environmental fiscal reform policy paper, and we then produced a carbon tax discussion paper in 2010. And of course, once you talk tax, suddenly people notice, like with the sugar beverage tax, what's the issue? Why a tax? Why a tax on emissions? And that has certainly kept, I think, the discussion, helped GIA as they've put forward our indicative commitments, and before that the various papers that they had. And so we then produced a carbon tax policy paper in 2013, which is more specific. Then we've had related papers because we've also had incentives that go with the carbon tax. And in fact, we've even given the incentives before the tax has been implemented. So, and then we had to produce the bill. We did it in 2015. We had a draft, and then finally we had this version much later. Get back to the first slides that we were going to start with. So, I'm just going back then to the background slide. So, that just tells you exactly when we had the actual bill, because remember we have a policy paper which then informed the bill, and Cabinet then adopted, after we took comments in 2017 August, noting that it was an integral part of the system for implementing government policy on climate change, and we published this a few months later in December for public comment, and introduced it in Parliament in early 2018, last year. And we've had, Chair, at least three or four rounds of consultations, both on a policy paper, every version of the bill, and the last bill before it came to Parliament, and also after, obviously it was tabled in the, or it was discussed in the Standing Committee on Finance. And in the budget last year, we announced that it would be implemented on the 1st of Jan this year, and then the Minister of Finance announced its postponement to 1st June, and we are sticking to the date now, 1st June this year. And as you know, the way this bill works is the committee discusses a draft bill in the National Assembly. So the formal tabling is only done after the process in the Standing Committee on Finance is almost done. We have a response document, and that response document, we make changes to the bill. And because it's a money bill, we then tabled it in November. So although it looks late, Parliament started the whole discussion early last year. And we've had lots of parliamentary meetings. Parliament also wanted us to go to NEDLAC. There was a task team report that was published in 2018, the issue of jobs losses. And, Chair, I should emphasize that when you look at carbon tax, we are starting the tax at a very low rate. So firstly, we felt we've almost given, from 2010 to 2018 notice to industry that we're going to be doing this, and giving them enough chance about changing their behavior for the future. So this bill is largely not about revenue. There is a revenue element, but it's not about revenue if you take the entire system. And in the first phase, what we wanted was to ensure that companies, when they shift towards new technology, as they're replacing their old machines, they start shifting towards cleaner technologies. So we feel that they've had ample notice to make those changes. And we still, even when the tax starts, it's only at 120 rands a ton, which if you compare internationally, depending on when the rand-dollar exchange is, I think at the time we were looking at more like $10. Today it's even lower than $10, with the rand sitting at 14. And internationally, I think we're looking at probably more something like $30 to $40 a ton. But even at the 120 rands a ton, you'll see that a lot of it is exempted, 60% of emissions, and then there's 40% around incentives. So in the first phase, if you actually do the right thing, you'll pay very little of the tax. But it's in the second phase, which will start, we think, around 2023, that we'll really start ratcheting it up in terms of the rate. Okay. So we're not hiding the fact that we won't be increasing it. It's one tax where we are even saying for the next 5 years, this is how much we'll increase it just with inflation. And if we do more, it will go through the normal parliamentary discussion. But it really depends on what's happening in the world. If the world is failing to reach that 2-degree target, we'll have to take stricter measures. We'll have to increase the tax. We'll have to take stricter quantitative controls, etc., that we're going to have in place. If, on the other hand, we're doing really well, then, you know, the tax could be lowered, but that ain't going to happen for the next 50 to 100 years. So, but you know, if we find ways of reducing the emissions and they've come down, obviously then the tax will adjust. So we're not making this a secret. We're saying this is the way it's going to work. It is the biggest challenge facing humankind, and it's what needs to be done. There's only one Earth. And even if Tesla and Richard Branson find cheaper ways of getting human beings to Mars, I don't think that's a sustainable option for the world. Just to make the last point, we've also had to split the bill so that members don't get confused, okay? That there is the carbon tax bill itself, and there's a component there linked to which we had to, which is not, do you want to just explain why we had to split it when we went through the classification process, Yanga? It's a 75 bill, not a money bill.
Thank you, Chair. When the bill was published for public comment, it had this amendment to Section 54A of the Customs and Excise Act, because that's how the carbon tax is going to be administered, through the Customs and Excise Act. So the bill went through the public consultation process with that provision. So when we went to do the certification at the state law advisors advised us that that one provision is not a money bill because it's administration. So they said it's a Section 75 bill, not a Section 77 bill. So during certification, they said that take that one provision out of the carbon tax, because the Carbon Tax Act or the Carbon Tax Bill is a money bill. And that provision, it's an admin bill. So hence we've got two bills with you today. It's the issue of differentiating between 75 and the 77 bill.
It's like the tax bills. Yeah.
Precisely like that, Chair. So Chair, I think just what we're going to do now is just to explain how the tax actually works. Shalin, if you can do that. And then we're going to later just go on to explain some of the incentives that go with it. I think the key point we're making is the one issue is how does the tax actually work? What's the impact on, say, Company A? You'll see that the tax itself is only aimed at what we call the scope 1 emitters, right? The direct emitters, okay? So, it because it's possible to reach all your indirect emitters. So, your direct emitters, though it doesn't apply to ESCOM in the first phase, but it's, for example, ESCOM, CESOL, etc., the actual companies that emit. It doesn't apply to you at home when you're consuming the electricity, for example, because so that's the theory of how this applies. Linked to it, there's a whole host of incentives that though we don't have earmarking of how we use the tax, but there's a form of what we call revenue recycling, energy efficient measures, etc. So we'll just explain how the entire system works. Even on electricity, for example, currently there is a levy, for example, that we've had. And when it gets to then what happened with the bill, we go through what the issues were in the Standing Committee on Finance. I mean, we note that the committee is going to have hearings. It's asked for submissions. I guess many of the submissions that you get may be sort of from the same parties that have submitted before. There may be some new ones. And largely, you know, when we come to that, we will show what people raise, and once they've submitted, we'll see whether there's any new issues that they've raised to this committee. We've made quite a few adjustments given the inputs, and so we're going to explain that. But I'll ask Sharon and Yanga and Memory just to take over. Chair, I'm going to have to, if you don't mind, step out and I'll come back, because the other committee is also starting, but I'll wait for a few minutes. If there's an issue there, I just have to deal with. I think you know the issues. So I just want to excuse myself, but I'll try and be back.
Thanks, Momo. So, as Momo mentioned, the tax will apply to combustion-related emissions from the energy sector, process emissions, including emissions from your cement, iron and steel sectors, and fugitive emissions, which is some emissions from mining, specifically coal mining. So those are emissions that we can actually measure and calculate. So when we thought about the tax in terms of what rates would apply, we looked at international practice in terms of what are the costs of damages caused by these emissions. We proposed the rate at the lower end, which at the time was being proposed at around $30 through the Stern Review, for example, and it's proposed at the rate of 120 Rand. We provide allowances, as you see on the left-hand side of the slide, which just specifies what are the different allowances. All activities would qualify for a basic 60% tax-free emissions. And then we will apply a set of incentives linked to the other 40% of emissions. So the 60% applies across the board. We then provide for those companies that argue that they are trade exposed, that if we impose the tax, there wouldn't be, it will compromise their exports. We provide them with a tax-free allowance for trade exposure. The allowance is provided up to a maximum of 10%. We, for those companies that argue that they cannot mitigate specifically process emissions, we provide a 10% allowance for process and fugitive emissions. So those two allowances takes care of the trade exposure aspects and where it's difficult to mitigate. We provide an additional 5% allowance, we call the performance allowance. So this allowance is based on a benchmark that a sector or a subsector would develop. And if that sector or subsector performs better than that benchmark, it can qualify for that 5% allowance. So this allowance is to encourage firms to actually reduce the intensity of producing a particular product. And it helps with reducing the absolute emissions. We also, in the consultations, as part of the carbon tax discussion paper and the carbon tax policy paper in 2013, there were proposals from stakeholders for us to provide or allow them to use offsets to reduce their emissions. So offsets is basically investments in projects through the clean development mechanism where they can reduce their emissions. So in the design of the tax, we allow them to use offsets. We've kept the offsets at 10%. But it interchanges between 5 and 10%, where 10% applies for combustion-related emissions and 5% for process emissions. And this gives firms an opportunity to actually reduce their tax liability. So those are the three, four incentive mechanisms built into the design of the tax. In addition, there were consultations around 2014, 2015, where the Department of Environmental Affairs had initiated the process around carbon budgets, where they would allocate emissions to particular companies, and we then had agreed with the department that for the first phase of the carbon budget system, which kicked in from 2016 to 2020, it's a voluntary system. So in the system, firms would report their emissions to the Department of Environmental Affairs, so it has data to help the department actually set more stricter budgets, which is a maximum emissions that can be allowed for these firms from 2020 onwards. So for that carbon budget that is currently voluntarily reported to the Department of Environmental Affairs, we provide those companies with a 5% tax-free allowance. This is an incentive to encourage them to actually report in order to help us to set the policy going forward. So that in all is the set of allowances that we provide for the tax. In summary, the allowances range from 60 to 95%, which means that the effective tax rate is lowered from 120 to ranging between 6 Rand and 48 Rand a ton CO2 emissions. So that's on the tax side, the rate and the actual allowances and other incentives. In addition to that, during the consultations and as part of some of the work we did to reduce the impact of the tax on certain energy-intensive users and consumers, we needed to look at ways of recycling the revenues to complement the introduction of the tax. So on your right-hand side, you will see a range of measures that were introduced. What we have committed to for the first phase of the tax up to December 2022 is that there will be no impact on the price of electricity, which will help cushion both energy-intensive users as well as consumers and households. So how would we do this is that currently there is an electricity generation levy that is payable by electricity generators, including Eskom and some of your big industrial users. So that payment of that electricity generation levy will be offset against the carbon tax liability of those entities. So that would help to ensure that we have no impact on the price of electricity for the first phase. The second part of it is that there's a renewable energy premium that's built into our electricity pricing structures. So for that renewable energy component, we would also allow an offset against the carbon tax liability to help to ensure that there's no impact on electricity pricing. And this was a concession that was made during the consultations on the carbon tax as a result of comments that we received in the process. In addition to that, we introduced an energy efficiency savings tax incentive in 2013, and this is in terms of, it's an income tax incentive. So to the extent that a company makes investments in equipment or changes its process to reduce its energy consumption and achieve energy savings, those savings can be deducted for income tax purposes. So this incentive was introduced in 2013. At the time, it was, and now it's part of the package of measures to help industries make this transition, and it has already been claimed by a range of taxpayers, but my colleague Memory will elaborate a bit on that in the context of our the comments that we've received. So the big concession in terms of the way the revenues would be used from the tax is in terms of this commitment to electricity price neutrality, no impact on electricity prices in the first phase. To the extent that there is some funding available, earmarking is not supported, but we have said that to the extent that there are credible on-budget programs that can be supported, we would consider those, specifically around improving public transport, whether it's passenger transport or with respect to freight, looking at ways of enhancing the free basic electricity component that is within, that's currently provided for households, and focusing on the cleaner electricity options. Those are the type of initiatives that are already available on budget, but those can be enhanced with the introduction of the tax. So this is the way the tax is designed, and it takes into account comments over the past 8 years. We'll briefly talk through in terms of the comments that we received from 2013 to 2017 without repeating too much of it. But just to say, firstly, we committed to electricity price neutrality and the way in which we did that. Secondly, there were comments provided on the initial bill that we put out where we did not specify the rate of the tax, and we were then stakeholders requested that we specify the rate of the tax and how the tax will increase over time, which we have then done in the 2017 bill and is carried through in the 2018 version of the bill. As mentioned already, to ensure alignment between the carbon tax and the carbon budget system, we provide the 5% carbon budget allowance for encouraging firms to report. There were also comments raised on carbon tax modeling, and we were asked to do additional modeling, which we did using through some work undertaken through the World Bank in 2014-2015, and our modeling shows that the carbon tax will help us with reducing emissions. It's in the region of 13 to 14.5% by 2025, and it will help make a contribution towards us meeting our target that we set out for the Paris Agreement. It also shows that the impact of the tax can be reduced to the extent that the revenues are recycled appropriately, which is what we try to do. Fifth point is that we consulted on the allowances, and one of the comments that we received was that our initial proposal for the allowance for trade exposure was company-based. The request was that this should be shifted to a sector-based allowance to make it easier for companies administratively to apply for the allowance. So that is what we had done in the last 2 years. And we have a threshold that applies for trade intensity, above which you get the full allowance. That was reduced from 50% to 30%, meaning more energy-intensive, emissions-intensive sectors, including mining and iron and steel, can qualify that allowance and help them to transition. There are a few other aspects that we provided some concessions on, which, as mentioned, we provided the process and fugitive emissions allowance explicitly at 10%, the offsets allowance, where we then expanded the scope of those allowances to also include certain type of renewables. So that's a summary of the changes that happened in the policy from the carbon tax policy paper in 2013 to the 2017 bill that we put forward. So very quickly, what we touch on now is the main changes that were made to the bill in the last year through the Standing Committee on Finance process. So quickly, taking into account the other changes, the four main areas that we made adjustments was in terms of taxation of domestic aviation, which would be included within the tax. We increased the allowances, the maximum allowance, from 90 to 95%, and we provide them with additional support in terms of the offsets and the performance allowance. And the reason for this was to align the allowances under the tax for aviation with the global carbon offsetting reduction system that the aviation sector has to comply with. The second area is that for liquid fuels, we combine the allowances and increase the basic allowance from 60% to 75%, and this was just to make it easier to administer the tax. For liquid fuel emissions from liquid fuels, this will apply as a tax in terms of the existing fuel levy that exists because it's easier for us to administer. The third area was around waste incineration. So in the bill, we basically we tax energy emissions, process emissions, and fugitive emissions, but emissions from the agriculture, forestry, land use sectors, and waste sectors are excluded from the tax for the first phase. And the reason for that is because it's difficult to actually measure those emissions from, for example, livestock and sheep, etc. So the methodologies are not robust. So what happened is that on the waste side, we had a category of emissions for waste incineration, which was excluded, yet this was taxed under the emissions for energy combustion, for waste-to-energy processes. So we incorporated them back into the tax net. And lastly, there were several comments from stakeholders around the payment of the tax. Initially, we provided for two provisional payments and a reconciliation in the following year. Based on the comments received regarding how onerous this process would be for taxpayers, we had agreed to allow for one annual carbon tax payment, and this would happen in the year following the reporting of emissions by a particular company. So emissions would be reported on a calendar year basis from January to December. Those emissions would be reported to the Department of Environmental Affairs. The DR would verify those emissions in the following year from January to around March and verify those emissions, and those emissions would then be disclosed to SARS for purposes of determining the tax liability. And the payment would only take place in June and or July the following year because SARS needs to make sure that those emissions disclosed are actually accurate. So these were the big changes that happened in the 2018 bill as part of the SCOF process. We'll briefly just talk through key policy issues that were raised, just quickly around the energy efficiency savings tax incentive and extending that, the NEDLAC process will report back on, and the commitments we've made there and the administration of the tax. Memory?
Thanks, Shalin. So I guess, like Momo said, we put the carrot before the stick. So this was one of the carrots, the energy efficiency tax savings that we introduced in November 2013. And to date, so initially the rate was 45 cents per kilowatt hour. And following stakeholder consultations, we reviewed the rate to 95 cents per kilowatt hour in 2015. And to date, a lot of the mining and manufacturing sector players have claimed this incentive. And as of mid-2018, indications were that the fiscus had spent close to $3 billion on this particular incentive. And this incentive was supposed to end at the end of 2019, but we've since extended it following stakeholder consultations to the end of the first phase of the carbon tax. So we're going to still continue to allow industry to claim the tax incentive in addition to the other tax reallowances that Shalin talked to. And this is just a slide to show how much kilowatt hours have been saved through that incentive and the estimated cost to the fiscus. Okay, so within when we did the response after the public hearings, when we did our response document in July last year, the Standing Committee on Finance then directed us to go to NEDLAC and form a carbon tax beyond jobs mitigation and creation plan. And we went to NEDLAC, so we engaged labor and business within the NEDLAC forum. We had about 7 meetings from July to November 2018, and we were able to come together as the different constituencies and develop job mitigation and creation plans along for the carbon tax impact, and a lot of initiatives. So the different constituencies came up with the different plans, but then we all we amalgamated those plans and we came up with one single plan, and we submitted the report to the Standing Committee on Finance in November. So most of the initiatives that the different constituencies actually talked to were similar. So we talked to initiatives on energy, building waste, biodiversity and transport sectors, and a lot of these plans would need us to work operatively across government and with labor and business, and it was agreed that the proposals would be taken as part of the in terms of implementation within the Presidential Jobs Summit agreement.
Thanks, Memory. So basically, the proposals were cross-cutting. In terms of the focus, there's two areas we think that are very important in terms of the transition that we have to make, and to basically look at the opportunities for jobs reskilling as well as research development and technology innovation that would help us with the transition. So the other issue that was raised during the consultations was around the administration of the Act, which Yanga spoke to earlier. The specific comments that we received from stakeholders was that the Customs and Excise Act is not the appropriate legislation, and the reason for this was there was a view that emissions are not constituting a good, so they should not be administered through the Customs and Excise Act, and there were challenges again raised around things like the licensing processes for purposes of reporting emissions. The proposals were for a separate Carbon Tax Administration Act. We engaged stakeholders during the course of for the last 2 years, 2016 and early last year, and then again during the committee process, to basically confirm with them that the Customs and Excise Act is the appropriate instrument to administer the Act. The reason for this is because all products that are captured under the Customs and Excise Act are basically declared in terms of the World Customs Organization classification for goods. And these greenhouse gas emissions are classified as commodities under that are tradable. The second issue is that the administration of this Act would be as an environmental levy, which is already defined under the Customs and Excise Act, because we have other environmental levies in place, and therefore it was we would basically piggyback on that existing administration system, and this does not require a duplicate system to be set up for administering the tax. So it was our view, and which we've confirmed, is that this is a good and it would be administered under the Customs and Excise Act. During consultations with stakeholders in the process, there were concerns raised around the licensing, because from a Customs and Excise perspective, licensing happens at a warehouse or, in the case of emissions, at a facility level. So for a particular facility, whether it's a power station, you would know how much coal goes in, you can determine what is the emissions from that actual facility. So there were some concerns that this would be, again, too cumbersome for stakeholders to actually report on their emissions. So in the consultation, SARS agreed to consider a way of licensing that may not require all facilities to license, but to actually group activities so the entity or the company can basically report on the grouping of that activities as a single entity. So that was one of the areas, and Yanga would talk about the Customs and Excise Act a bit more in detail. And lastly, one of the issues raised in the consultations was around the alignment of the carbon tax and the carbon budget system, the future alignment of this from the time the carbon budget is expected to come into place as a mandatory system. The Treasury and the Department of Environmental Affairs engaged extensively on this, on the options for alignment. There was a piece of work done through the World Bank in 2016-2017, where we looked at the options for aligning the two instruments, one of which was that the tax would apply above the level of the carbon budget when the mandatory system kicks in. Based on discussions with DR last year, we agreed on an alignment where we would apply a higher tax rate for emissions above the allocated budget. This was announced by our minister in the MTBPS last year. During the consultations, industry was concerned around the rate that was proposed and requested further consultations. So we engaged industry at the request of the SCOF during the consultations in November last year, and we clarified that this was a proposal for possible alignment. This will form part of the consultation that we would engage both the Department of Environmental Affairs on and other affected stakeholders for the second phase of the tax beyond 2020. This process for the future does not technically or legally affect the carbon tax bill as it stands. We also noted, and I think it's important for the committee to note, that there is a process currently underway through the Department of Environmental Affairs on the development of the climate change bill, and this is under discussion in NEDLAC. This bill provides for the establishment of carbon budgets. However, the bill does not specify the methodology for determining those budgets that would be allocated to companies. So we have engaged the department, and we're continuing to engage with them, and we will also participate jointly in the NEDLAC process around a transparent process for specifying the methodology for this. We also, as part of the consultations, were quite clear that we will undertake a review of the carbon tax after at least 3 years of implementation, and this would take into account the impact of the tax in helping us meet our commitments to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. Chongli, do you want to add?
Yes. Thank you very much, Chair. As Shalin has mentioned, the bill doesn't specify what the process would be for the determination of the carbon budget, but there will be regulations that will be developed to deal with how you then assign a carbon budget to a company, because it will be treated through a regulation simply because it's a technical process rather than a principle. So that's how it's going to be dealt with. There is already guidance in the voluntary scheme for carbon budget in the current phase, and that will be translated into a formal process. Thanks.
So I think just to add that for comparing the two instruments in terms of the carbon tax, the design of the tax and the allowances is clearly outlined. For purposes of the budget, there may need to be a process around more transparency around the actual allocation methodology. So that's just in summary the changes that were made to and effected in the 2018 bill. We then considered, the bill was tabled in November last year, and then we went back to the SCOF for consideration and finalization of the tabled bill. And based on those consultations, there were additional submissions made by a range of stakeholders, including business, NGOs, some consulting companies, and there were a few minimal amendments made in terms of clarifications in certain sections of the bill. Just briefly, the one was in terms of Section 6 of the bill, where we clarified that the carbon tax payable would apply in terms of both emissions that are reported directly to the Department of Environmental Affairs using methodologies agreed to with the department, and then secondly, as well as to the extent that certain companies may not have agreed methodologies for reporting their emissions, they can use the factors as stipulated in Schedule 1 of the bill. So we just clarified that the tax payable also applies for those where emissions are reported to the department. The second one was that there were concerns regarding Clause 14, where we say that there's a limit on the tax-free allowance provided of 95%. Stakeholders clarified that we also have in the bill for example, those activities that are exempt, we give them 100% allowance. So they just wanted a clarification in the bill to state that the 95% applies, the limit applies to those sectors that are subject to the tax, and the 100% reflects an exemption of those activities. The third area was that we specified the tax period. We did not include the implementation date because it, our minister announced a change in the MTBPS, so we inserted within the tax period section the implementation date of the tax. And then with respect to the schedules, there were minor corrections regarding one of the values. The values used to actually to calculate your emissions, so we corrected that. We also provided some technical corrections to the level of allowances for process emissions. Some of this were provided with a 60% instead of a 70% basic tax-free allowance, which is the special dispensation we have for process emissions. So we corrected that. And then lastly, it was our mistake in that Schedule 3, which provided for the administration, the changes to the Customs and Excise Act, we put in the word bill, and you cannot have a bill within a bill, so we removed that word. So that's in summary the changes and in terms of the final bill that you have in front of you. And then lastly from my side, and I'll hand over to Yanga, is that just to confirm, the implementation date of the tax is 1st June. We would conduct a review of the tax and its impact after 3 years of implementation. Complementary to the tax, there will be 3 key sets of regulations. There's the carbon offset regulations that specifies the process for the administration process that firms must follow to actually claim the allowance, and it also sets puts down eligibility criteria for projects that would qualify for that allowance. We initially published a version of that bill in June 2016. We engaged extensively with stakeholders. We revised the regulation substantially, and we published a revised version of that draft regulation in November last year. We received around 26 sets of comments. We have a workshop planned for actually the 19th of March, but we'll have to change that date in order to take final comments and finalize that regulation. The second set of regulations is on the trade exposure allowance. This regulation will specify the sectors, subsectors, and the allowance that they would actually qualify for. We have engaged with BUSA during 2017 and early 2018 on the methodology for this allowance to shift to the sector-based allowance, and we will put out shortly the regulation that lists the sectors and the allowances that they would qualify for. And lastly, for the performance allowance, we provide for, we need to develop benchmarks. So we requested industries and sectors to submit benchmarks from around 2014. It was only towards the end of 2016, 2017 that industries started to develop these benchmarks and submit that to us. So over the last 2 years, we've engaged sectors extensively on the methodologies that they use to calculate those benchmarks and on those values as the Treasury. And final proposals were submitted to us towards the end of last year. We will also put out that regulation that specifies the sector, subsector, and the benchmarks shortly. It's already been consulted with industry, but it will be put out for a further round of consultation and finalization. So we will publish both the trade exposure and the benchmarking regulations before the end of this month.
Thank you. I've think I've just explained earlier on, in terms of technical and legal process, as you can see now, based on the amendments that Charlene was talking about, the minor technical amendments that were made after the bill was tabled, now we've got Bill 46B of 2018, because we have to include those minor amendments. So that is the first legal procedure that we have to deal with. And the second one was the fact that we have to take this provision dealing with the amendment to the customs out of the carbon tax, because the carbon tax is a money bill, and then we have to have a separate admin bill, a customs and amendment, a customs and excise amendment for admin purposes. Hence, now we are having two bills. So there is a view that, like, some people will feel confused that why are we having two bills at a later stage? That amendment, that provision was already there in the bill that was published for comment and in the bill that was deliberated. However, coming certification process by the state law advisors, we are advised that take out this one provision and make amendments in terms of Section 75. And the amendment for the customs, as we have said, is for the administration of the carbon tax. The second one is the licensing. And the third amendment gives Commissioner for SARS powers to make necessary rules in terms of the Customs and Excise Act for the payment of carbon tax. These rules will be published by SARS. We were asked during the consultation process that after the bill has gone through to the NCOP, SARS publishes the rules even if the bill has not been passed by Parliament, so that taxpayers can be aware how are the rules going to look like for the administration of customs and excise. So once the bill has gone through the process, we'll publish the rules for public consultation. But the rules will not come to Parliament because they are not legislation. They are a secondary regulation. They are like regulations, the rules. So they will not come to Parliament. So the implementation date for carbon tax is 1 June, as you have said. But we'll publish the rules after this, after the bill has gone through the NCOP. We are working with SARS on the rules. The rules will be published for public comment so that taxpayers can know what are the practical, what will be the practical application and the administration of the carbon, of the carbon tax. Thank you.
Are you done?
Sorry, Chair. We have a lot of background slides that go into the case for climate change and other issues, so that's just available for information.
Available for our information. Just on the regulations. Don't take so long. Do the work and bring the bill to whatever, to Parliament. That we do a thorough work on it. Thank you to Treasury. Anything else to add from you, from the Department of Environmental Affairs? The green person. Thank you. It's very clear to me, honorable members, listening to the presentation, there will be, have to be intensive and robust oversight over the implementation of this. Of this legislation. Also, going back in history, when we did the sugar tax, the beverage, the same thing. We will have to intensify our oversight over the implementation of that legislation as well. Now, that is future music for the new Select Committee on Finance in the sixth Parliament. Honourable members, you have received the bill that is under discussion, B46B 2018, here it is, as amended by the Standing Committee on Finance. And then Solani also circulated to you the report from NEDLAC. You must read it. It's very important. Because NEDLAC will have to come to Parliament also to come and inform us about the progress in different processes. Thank you for your presentation. We appreciate that. Honourable members, are there any questions that you want to ask you, you're welcome. I note Honorable Essak. Anyone else? No one? Honorable Essak?
Great. Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. It is an interesting presentation, but I must be very honest, also somewhat difficult to digest and comprehend in terms of all the different slides. And
ask your questions. You've got time now. Ask.
So, I'm not going to go into all the percentages and that one particular slide, which was a bit of a jawbreaker for me, because you talk of 5% on the one side, and then you talk of a 60 plus another 5% on this side. And anyway, be that as it may, but you know, Chairperson, coming from Mpumalanga, and when I drive specifically from Johannesburg to a little town called Mashishing, where I live, it's about 300 kilometers that route, and I have to pass past places like Emalahleni, and then I have to pass Oorgies, and then I have to pass Delmas, and then I have to move on to Middelburg. Now that is the heartland of Eskom and the famous Tegeta mines, etc. And I see the smoke and, you know, etc., billowing up, and I always think about people that live in these areas, and this is why it's of somewhat of interest, and I've been trying to pay attention. But seeing that nobody else has got any questions, so I'm going to take a little advantage of my opportunity. Chairperson, just to direct questions and simplify them, I made some notes in that. What I'd like to know is, what is, in terms, remember you spoke of, and I read something yesterday when I got the presentation, the Paris Climate Agreement in 2015, I think it was. Now, currently, 2019, is there an update? What is South Africa's current contribution globally in terms of the greenhouse gas emissions, if you comprehend that, okay? I'd like to know, percentage-wise, what is our contribution towards this global greenhouse gas emissions. And then, Chairperson, the fact that South Africa is still in a stage of economic development, quite frankly, I mean, do we honestly believe that a further tax on corporates in a country which is still regarded as a developing nation, does this honestly justify this bill, yet a further tax on corporates in a developing economy? I just wanted to understand your viewpoint on that. And then, Chairperson, last two is, yeah, this is the one. Eskom's coal-fired power stations are the biggest carbon emitters. And whilst I understand from the presentation that they will largely be exempted from this tax, I think for the next 4 or 5 years, up to 2022, if I remember the presentation or the slide. Do we honestly believe, as South Africans and as National Treasury, that Eskom can, in the medium term, afford any additional costs? And will they honestly come to the party and play their role, irrespective of what laws are in place in terms of what's currently transpiring at Eskom and the unbundling that we hope comes to fruition? And then finally, Chairperson, I haven't heard anything about what guarantees or what checks and balances are there in place in terms of this bill or from National Treasury that the revenue generated from this carbon tax bill will be then channeled back specifically for specific environmental use, or will it just get lost in our national revenue budget and you collect the taxes but it goes to education or it goes to wages and salaries or whatever you want to call it? Chairperson, yeah, I think I'll rest my case there for now. Thank you.
One word, Rita.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I think I must agree with the previous speaker that it's quite a complicated, in my view, bill, Chair, because one, it involves three departments as I look at them,
yourselves, your environmental, your treasury. But I think there's a lead that is missing in my view. Because all what you are talking about, it's not happening in the space. It's happening at a municipal level. But throughout the emissions, throughout your presentation and your stakeholders' consultation, I didn't hear anything about SALGA as one of your stakeholders in terms of, I know the bill is more about taxing, but taxing the emission that is happening somewhere. And I'm also quite interested to know the monitoring thereof. You are saying they will be reporting, the industries will be reporting on the emission. But for the bill to be effective, you have to have systems in place to make sure that there's proper monitoring so that you are able, at the end of the day, to have to achieve the goal that you have set for yourself. For me, it's hazy somewhere there. I am not sure. Maybe I listened out of confusion. And critical at this point that, as I was saying, it's happening in municipalities, and you'd like really to know the benefit of those communities that are affected by emissions. For me, it's proper to have it, because we cannot say, because there are challenges in some entities or industries, let us not implement the bill, yet it has serious implications to human beings. So for me, the bill is fine. Thanks, Chair.
Anyone else? Thank you. You may reply. Sorry. Oliver Shibango. Okay. I didn't see your hand.
Let me start first by apologizing for my late arrival. I'm not waiting for TA.
We noted that you are present. Please.
My simple question would be, how are you going to regulate this carbon tax money that is going to be collected to benefit the poor of the poorest, the systems in place that we have? Then do you not see this carbon tax as a way of reducing the work, especially in the Free State where we have Sasol and coal mines and Mpumalanga, work that we already need because people are losing their jobs because of many things. Thank you.
Any other member? Fine. May I reply?
Thank you very much for the question. So I'll respond and I'll ask my colleagues to come in. On the Paris Climate Agreement, so this was a commitment that we made under the Paris Agreement in 2015, 2016, and this was led by our late minister, Edna Molewa. Where we put down South Africa's commitments to the global effort to reduce emissions. So we accepted our responsibility as a country to reduce our emissions. And in accepting that responsibility, we put forward a specific target, which was also put forward by other big developing economies as well. And our target is quite clear that our emissions need to peak at a point, plateau for a period, and then decline. The issue around where do we rank in terms of absolute emissions is that we probably in the region of around 12th to 14th in the world, depending on which data you look at, in terms of our absolute emissions. The challenge we sit with is that, and on a per capita basis, our emissions are comparable to developed countries in the region of around 12 tons per capita. and that becomes very difficult for us to justify on the basis of that we have people that don't have access to electricity. So from that perspective, in terms of our commitment to ensure that emissions stay within the range of 2 degrees and even are lowered to 1.5 degrees, which the evidence is showing where we should be going, and our per capita emissions, South Africa has accepted its responsibility. In accepting that responsibility, this instrument forms part. It's not the only instrument. That is why it's introduced in the way it is, at a very low rate, with a whole range of incentives to provide the economy and sectors with a chance to transition. The issue around why are we applying this tax and is it not an additional tax on corporates. We published a paper in 2006 on environmental fiscal reform, and in this paper we acknowledged that the market does fail to price these environmental externalities. So in your pricing of goods and services, we only include, or mainly include, the financial costs of those production. We don't take into account the costs imposed on society at large. And if you're looking at electricity generation emissions, energy sector emissions, we've got various externalities associated with those sectors. One is the emissions of greenhouse gases that make us one of the top emitters in terms and absolute emissions in the top 20 in the world, but also the emissions of sulfur dioxide, which has already been mentioned. These emissions of sulfur dioxide cause increased incidences of asthma in people living in that particular area. So the externality costs of climate change, local air pollution, is not taken into account in the pricing of goods and services. And this instrument is aimed at correcting that market failure, firstly. And then secondly, in correcting that market failure, creating both the incentives for businesses and households to start to change their mindset in terms of how production is done and what we consume. It is at a marginal rate initially. It starts to internalize those costs, and over time it would be ramped up to basically give sectors and industries time to adjust to the introduction of the tax. The issue around Eskom and coal-fired power stations, we are facing various challenges regarding the energy sector, both I think from an environmental perspective as well as a financial perspective as we're moving forward. Big organizations, for example, the World Bank, and the financial sector is basically looking to not subsidize these power stations as we go forward. So I think we need to look at this in a broader perspective around Eskom. This tax is aimed it's an economy-wide instrument. It's encouraging both producers and consumers to start to change their behavior. We provided the energy efficiency savings tax incentive since 2013. The biggest beneficiaries has been mining and manufacturing to date, and some of the bigger emitting companies have been the biggest beneficiaries of that incentive. And we introduced this tax without actually, we introduced the incentive without the tax being in place, just to help with that transition that needs to be made. As we're going forward, and my colleague from Environmental Affairs, who's more of us on this, would be able to add, the reality is that as we go forward, the commitments that we submitted now to Paris up to 2020, we will have to submit revised commitments beyond 2020 once this is the Paris Agreement is operationalized. Those commitments will have to be more stringent than the commitments that we've submitted to date, basically meaning that we have to prepare for operating in a carbon-constrained economy, and we need to start changing the structures of our industry and economy. So this tax is there to create that mindset, to change that mindset and create those incentives as we move forward. And then just in terms of revenue, the use of the revenue from the tax, this was also raised by various stakeholders in the consultations, as with most taxes, on why is the revenues not earmarked. One of the challenges with earmarking revenues from this tax is that if you're looking at the range of incentives, at the margin, it's possible that only 5% of emissions would be taxed, which wouldn't raise a lot of revenue. And it wouldn't be sufficient in order to support that full range of programs that can also be complement the tax and help us with that transition. So that's the reason why we've not said we won't earmark the tax per se, but we've committed to recycling those revenues through the tax incentive, which is a subsidy, indirect subsidy to businesses. We've committed to electricity price neutrality in the first phase, and we've also said we can look at those on-budget programs that are already being supported and ways to enhance them, specifically around public transport, free basic electricity, etc. So that's the reason why it's not earmarked. The questions on the technical part of it and municipalities, usually we put out these papers into the public domain, and it's put on our website, so we receive comments. And when we receive those comments, we engage with stakeholders through a workshop. During the process, we have also engaged municipalities. So they haven't submitted, some of them may not have submitted formal comments, but we have engaged, for example, the city of Swane, Itekwene municipality, I think Western Cape as well, over the past 8 years, specifically around role of municipalities and for some of them that do actually produce electricity. So we've engaged them on that, and they are aware of this instrument. The other area that is critical in the context of municipalities is the options for waste to energy, things like converting using methane from landfills to produce electricity. So in that context, for municipalities, they can access the offsets allowance, and sorry about the technicality around that, but they can access the offsets allowance to help them make those projects more viable and sell those to companies that want to reduce their emissions. So that is an opportunity that can be explored for municipalities. On the monitoring of emissions, which has been raised, and we should have mentioned that in our presentation, but the administration of this tax will be done by SARS, as with all other taxes, but they will rely heavily on the Department of Environmental Affairs for the emissions that are reported. So I'll hand over to my colleagues who can add and respond to the questions. Thanks.
Thank you. Yes, so in terms of the monitoring, reporting and verification of emissions, we have a couple of systems and tools that we developed a number of years ago. The first one is we have the regulations that clearly stipulate what emissions needs to be reported, for what sources of emission, and by what type of industries and categories. So that is well defined. We also have a reporting program that is currently manual. It's the second year of that reporting program this year. So industry knows exactly what templates to use when they have to report. Parallel to this, we are just enhancing our online reporting system. It's called the National Atmospheric Emission Inventory System. Currently, it's facilitating the reporting of air pollutants, because this started about 3 years ago. So we are just building the greenhouse gas emissions reporting module of that system, which should be up and running by December 2019. And then we also have a methodological guidance document which guides industry on what methods to use when they quantify their emissions. So in a nutshell, that's how the system functions. Then on that question of where we rank, we, as Charlene said, we are currently ranking number 14 in the world in terms of emissions. But if you were to look at our total emissions, we are ranking number 11, just behind Saudi Arabia. So we are quite significant. But just also to put things into context, if you look at Sweden's emissions, the total emissions from Sweden are about 40 million tons. But if you look at Sasol's emissions, so that's accounting for all economic activities. It's 40 million tons. But if you look at Sasol's emissions, they are 60 million tons, which means that Sasol's emissions are 20 million tons more bigger than Sweden's emissions, the whole economy. So that gives you a sense of the scale of what we are dealing with. They are similar to Eskom. Eskom is the fourth biggest power utility in the world. So that also gives you a sense of the scale of emissions. Thank you very much.
Just for interest, sir, can you give us a paper on what you just said? Comparison. What's happening globally? That we get that picture as well. I'm really interested in that. The point you just made. And just forward it to Solani.
Thank you, Chair. I can also just mention that Sweden actually was one of the first countries to implement a carbon tax. They started it in 1990, and that tax has realized about more than 30% emission savings in economy-wide. So that's one of the issues just to mention.
Are you done? Any other follow-up questions on the members? The process forward with this legislation and the bill that we will be dealing with 1 o'clock, is that next Tuesday, the 12th, there will be public hearings. Albanita mentioned SALGA. Section 67 of the Constitution indicates that SALGA has 10 seats in the NCOP and is actually supposed to participate in the proceedings of the Council. So, I hope they are listening, that they also come to our hearings and other proceedings of our committees. The advertisements appeared in Sunday's newspaper and was there regional? Yeah. In the papers about the hearings of the 12th. So, we will be dealing with that. We acknowledge also COSATU. They've got an appointment now with the Chief Whip Mahai, but that they were also present here. Honourable members, if there's no more questions, then that concludes the first part of the briefings. And yes, you're right, Mr. Rentu, that we go straight to the 4 sets of the minutes. Thank you for your input here. You are welcome to attend the hearings next week. Here comes instruction from the secretary, you must be there. No, fine. Next Tuesday, you will just communicate where it will be, in which venue. We release you now. Thank you. When you travel, please travel safely. Yes, we want to see you again. Honourable members, there are 4 sets of minutes. Let's do our work. And then we can be productive at the 1 o'clock session. The first set is the 19th of February, all members, it was circulated to members. The pre-budget briefing by the PBO, the Parliamentary Budget Office, just before the tabling of the national budget. I put to members page 1. Those who were present, apologies, etc. Go ahead, thank you. Thank you, members. I put to you, honourable members, page 2, those who were present from the staff, PBO, introduction, presentation by the PBO, captured, members received the documentation. Matters that was raised, page 3 and page 4, and then we go to the closing remarks. I put to members the minutes of the 19th of February,
Can I get a mover for adoption?
Thank you very much.
Those who were present, the Beer, Esak, George, Shabangu.
Can I write?
I can't propose. Honorable Shabangu propose. Can
for the sake of progress, I...
The seconder is Honorable Esak. Thank you, Honorable Esak. You're very progressive.
It's pretty honorable, but like, well, I can't even not say.
Honorable members, let's go to the minutes of the 21st of February. The ministerial briefing on the 2019 budget, although the briefing on the division of revenue we will only receive tomorrow, that's the select committee on appropriations. Page 1 is those that were present, 1, 2, 3, 4, yeah. Page 2, the whole contingent in attendance, from Treasury, including the Minister, Deputy Minister, and then the staff on page 3, presentation by the Minister of Finance, and that presentation you received, as well as the documents, the books. Page 4, matters that was raised, and you also find those matters in the committee report we adopted yesterday on the fiscal framework and revenue proposals. Page 5 and page 6. I put the minutes of the 21st of February to the committee. Can I get a mover for adoption? Honorable Esak moves for adoption. Honorable Shibangu, will you second?
Okay. The man next to
you? You were present, Honorable Shibangu.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Honorable Shibangu. Thank you very much. Appreciation for that. Honorable members, the set of minutes for the 26th of February. Again, a post-budget briefing by the budget office. And the FFC. Page 1. Good attendance, page 1. Yes. Yes. Page 2, the presentation, etc.
Who's the
FFC?
Yes, I'll tell you.
Yeah, just a correction on page 1 of the members. At the top agenda, it was only the PBO. The FFC has got another session coming to Parliament, but they will engage with the Appropriations Committee. So I put the minutes of the 26th of February to the committee. Can I get a mover for adoption? Honorable Monakeri, very active. Thank you, Honorable Monakeri, proposing for adoption. Seconder, Honorable Esak seconds. Thank you, members.
Chairperson, you will recall. Chairperson, you will recall that this particular meeting. It was a very good meeting that we had. It was actually very intensive, but it was very inspiring with the stakeholders.
We complimented the PBO.
Yeah, no, we complimented the meeting that we had. Yeah.
No, order. The 1st of March, the minutes of the 1st... Huh? Where is it? I don't have that one. The 27th of February... The public hearings on the budget. There you've got the... members in attendance, and those that appeared before us, page 2,